Welcome to Pentagon Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Here's your host, Tom Temin.
The Defense Department started deployment of its new electronic health record, a major milestone last week in the $4.3 billion program known as MHS Genesis. The first site is a small clinic at Fairchild Air Force Base in Washington State. But officials say they've learned some big lessons they'll carry forward as they install the system at hundreds of other military treatment facilities around the world. That'll be a five-year effort. Stacey Cummings is DOD's Program Executive Officer for Defense Health Management Systems. She spoke with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu about the long road ahead and the sense of relief at having pulled off the first successful deployment.
We are so excited. Definitely spent last week with butterflies, anticipating how it was going to go. We were very optimistic, but until you see it working and you hear the feedback from the users, we were just nervous and excited, and it was a great feeling of nervous and excitement because we were doing something historic in that we're deploying a commercial off-the-shelf electronic health record, and this is our first step on the journey to deploying it across the entire military health system. Yeah. So yes, so excited, really happy. We chose Fairchild for a lot of reasons out here in Spokane, Washington. One of the reasons is the great leadership of Colonel Carey. Also, the size, we were able to come in a outpatient environment, really get to see how the system operates specifically to our military workflows, but also see how well we did putting our computer-based training and our instructor-led training together. And we're going to learn so many lessons from here, our deployment at Fairchild, and our next site will be even better, and the one after that will be better than that. And we're just going to continue to learn and take the commercial best practices and apply what we learn on top of that to make the deployments more seamless for our users and make sure that they're even more prepared than they were for our first deployment here in February.
What do you think you did learn out of your first instantiation here at Fairchild? How much of what you went through leading up to today is repeatable at the rest of the sites? Obviously, every MTF is different, but...
I think that we learned a lot, and there's a lot of things that we can repeat. So we put together computer-based training based on roles, and so we are absolutely pleased with the level of training that we put together. One of the things that I think is a great lesson learned is taking the time between when we've completed training and when we go live to do some more real-life exercises around how a patient moves through the system. Because as we trained our providers, they were very focused on training on how to use the system for their work, but I think understanding how your role impacts the roles of your teammates and how your role impacts the patient moving from place to place through the system is really valuable, and I think we're going to be able to take those lessons learned and apply them as early as our next site, which will be Oak Harbor, and we'll definitely get a little bit better at that every time so that it's part of our normal change management activities.
I think one of the things that hasn't gotten a lot of attention throughout the course of the whole Dim Sum project and finally putting in Genesis is that this is not something you can just drop into an MTF. There was a lot of behind-the-scenes infrastructure upgrades that were necessary. Can you just talk a bit about sort of the scale of that effort alone, which I assume you're going to have to repeat at basically every MTF around the world?
So the Defense Health Agency Health Information Technology Group, which is led by Colonel Chip Terry, he is actually deploying an infrastructure in advance of MHS Genesis. So we will have the infrastructure in place to support a modern, connected, secure EHR. So as we come in, we are actually coming into an MTF that's already been upgraded with the local infrastructure that they need to have the speed and the latency that makes sense for a modern electronic health record.
Mm-hmm. Does that fold in any way with broader IT infrastructure upgrades that are happening throughout the department through the joint information environment, the MPLS rollouts, or is the health network sort of its separate thing that does not really need interconnections between the broader IT enterprise? Does that question make sense?
The question does make sense. So the decision that was made to standardize the infrastructure in the medical community of interest is one that we're implementing right now, and then looking at other enterprise implementations around network and infrastructure. We'll take lessons learned from that and see how we can take the what we've done in medical and then integrate that into sort of a larger enterprise solution. Mm-hmm. But right now, the MedCoy deployment is to make sure that all of our military health system is on a standard infrastructure, and that will ease the implementation of MHS Genesis as we arrive at each site.
Right, because you're not having to do a bunch of one-off fixes at every single local installation to make it interface with that base's infrastructure, right?
Exactly.
So another reason this isn't just a drop-in replacement is that you're having to go slowly, and it's got to continue running with all of your legacy systems because we have a very mobile military population that's going to get served at places that have Genesis and places that don't have Genesis yet. I guess my question there is, once the rollout is completely done in 2022, does all of the legacy infrastructure go away, the sustainment costs of all of that, or are pieces of what we now think of as Alta CHCS going to have to stick around over a longer time period?
The deployment of MHS Genesis across the enterprise in Garrison will allow us to shut down and no longer have to pay the sustainment costs around select legacy systems, the ones you pointed out, Alta, CHCS, and Accentris. The deployment of MHS Genesis in Garrison is also followed by the MHS Genesis deployment in our theater environment in operational medicine. And so there are some systems that we will that have a thread throughout both Garrison and operational. And so from a timeline perspective, we'll shut those systems down when it makes sense, when we've converted or transitioned all of our users onto MHS Genesis, either Garrison or operational. There are some legacy systems that perform military unique capabilities that don't have a parallel in the commercial environment. Mm-hmm. And so we took that into account when we were looking at the affordability of the system in buying a commercial off-the-shelf EHR that would replace select legacy systems, but not those legacy systems that do things that are military unique. It made more sense to keep those, to sustain those and create interfaces. Mm-hmm. And there are some that we will continue to maintain and sustain even after we've fully deployed MHS Genesis.
Can you give me some sense of how much of DoD's requirement for an electronic health record is militarily unique? In other words, how much of the commercial product actually suited your needs without modification, more or less?
So the only actual change to the system that was necessary was around pharmacy, because we do things in pharmacy that no one else does currently. But we did find that by investing in this pharmacy capability, that we believe it's going to be reusable, and so it made a lot of sense to make that investment. Some of the things that it doesn't make sense to make that investment in are around readiness and things that are very, very focused on the military readiness and understanding the readiness of our service members. So we do use that information to push out so that the commander has situational awareness on the operational side. It didn't make sense for us to do that in the EHR. But there are also systems that are used by multiple communities. Mm-hmm. And if they're not only used by the medical community, they have dual purpose. They have purposes outside of medical. It didn't make sense for us to try to recreate that.
Gotcha. And you mentioned theater care briefly. How much customization was needed there? Does Genesis even apply in the world of deployed medicine?
Mm-hmm. So we are deploying MHS Genesis under a program called JOMIS, which falls under my PEO's portfolio. So what we're going to do is take MHS Genesis, which is currently configured to be centrally hosted at a data center in Kansas City, and we are in the process of taking that configuration and then putting it into a low-com, no-com environment. So we're going to be able to take all that capability and put it onto small servers or laptop servers, and we'll take that capability, test it. There are a couple of unique interfaces we'll need in order to support theater medicine. And once we've tested those interfaces and tested the capability in low comms and no comms, we'll do exactly what we're doing here, which is we'll select some initial operating capability sites. We'll test it in that operational environment, and once we've tested it, then we'll deploy that more broadly.
That's Stacy Cummings, the DoD's Program Executive Officer for Defense Health Management Systems, speaking with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu. Find this interview and more coverage of the Health Record Program at federalnewsradio.com. I'm Tom Temin.
Pentagon Solutions will return after these messages. You're listening to Pentagon Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Now here's your host, Tom Temin.
Like the weak batter in a baseball lineup, it comes round and round and always disappoints. In this case, it's the Armed Services Financial Accounting. Because they're unable to achieve the accuracy required for clean opinions from auditors, they are still on the high-risk list maintained by the Government Accountability Office. Here with more, Asif Khan, Director of Financial Management and Assurance Issues at the GAO. Mr. Khan, good to have you back.
Good morning, Tom. Glad to be back.
Every year, it seems. Now, we're talking about 2015, the latest year for which auditable information, I guess, is assembled, and the outside auditors still can't render an opinion good, bad, or indifferent because of the information they've got?
That's correct, Tom. Let me just update you. The results for 2016 were also released several months ago. However, the results are very similar to what they were in 2015. And yes, to answer your question, the way the progress is measured currently is through the audit results, which are provided by the independent public accounting firms. And the audit results for both FY15 and FY16 was that the public accounting firms were not able to render an opinion on the military services budgetary schedule.
So they could be spending every cent properly and excellently, but you just can't tell.
You could say that. It's the degree of precision with which you can assure that the information which is presented in DoD's budgetary schedule is presented fairly. And that's what the opinion is. Lack of an opinion means that the auditors could not give that assurance.
And what is it about DoD, we're talking the armed services, Army, Navy, Air Force, and by extension under the Navy, the Marine Corps. What's the weakness here that seems to be intractable?
Yeah, the best way to perhaps describe the weakness is to illustrate what the audit firms had come up with in their giving the disclaimer of opinion on these statements. They had four primary reasons. The first one was that they could not really gain assurance from management that all the information that should have been presented in the budgetary schedule was actually presented. So it's the completeness factor here, that there could be transactions which originate in virtually thousands of different feeder systems. They may not have made their way into the statements. The second one is that the auditors could not get support documentation for the transactions, which were actually recorded in the statements. So without support for transactions, the auditor cannot make a determination whether or not they were accurate and reliable. And then thirdly, there were lack of adequate systems control. As you know, DoD, a lot of large organizations like the military services, they rely on automated systems for day-to-day management. The auditors found there was several control weaknesses in the automated systems, so they could not rely on the information which was being produced by those systems and eventually being recorded in the financial statements. And finally, this is more of a management issue. The military services did not have procedures for adequate oversight over their service providers, such as the Defense Finance and Accounting Service.
When you use the term budgetary schedules, is that the equivalent of the income statement or the balance sheet for a corporation or some hybrid?
It really is more of a cash basis. This is the, if you will, the revenue or the budget that has been allocated to the services from Congress. That's what's reported in the budgetary schedule. So it's going to link back directly to the president's budget. The schedule also has information on the amounts that have been spent that year. And as you perhaps appreciate, the budgetary process is pretty complicated. So the other portions of this schedule also include the amounts which are remaining from a given pot of money which has been allocated by Congress. And then finally, it has the disbursements made during that year against the amount of money that was appropriated.
So the disbursements, is that where they get run afoul? Because they must know what came in from the Treasury to start with.
Correct. That's one significant area because DOD or the components or the military departments have not been able to reconcile their fund balance with Treasury. What's in their books, if you will, what's in their checkbook to the balance in the bank, in this case, it will be the Treasury. So that's one of the key areas. The other one is in the steps before that, they have not been able to account accurately as to the money, how that has been spent. Before the money is actually dispersed to the ultimate party, there are various steps in the budgetary cycle which have to be accounted properly. I mean, these are obligations and other such terms which are used, and they have to be accurately accounted for to make sure that they're not overspending.
We're speaking with Asif Khan, Director of Financial Management and Assurance Issues at the Government Accountability Office. So ultimately, it's a management issue expressing itself as systems, weaknesses, and other things. And so you make recommendations. What were the main ones this year? Were they any different from the past, I guess, 10, 12 years you've been looking at this? And what does management say that's different from those past decade or more?
Yes, correct, Tom. Our focus on this one, the objective of the study was to was to say what the opinion was, what the auditor's opinion was for the FY15 audit. We gave a little bit more illustrative information that may typically be included in the auditor's opinion. Then further, we focused in on as to what the processes were at each of these military services to address the finding and recommendations. And then finally, what were the processes for monitoring and tracking corrective actions at the DoD level? I mean, there are various guidance out there for the federal agencies to develop their corrective action plans. And what we found that each of the services had some deficiencies in their process for addressing the finding and recommendations, which are related to financial management issues. Similarly, we found gaps at the DoD level to be able to track, monitor, and report the finding and recommendations and the remediation activity on a department-wide basis. All in all, we made 8 recommendations. 5 of them were addressed to the military services. 3 were addressed to the Department of Defense. The military services concurred with the recommendations. The comptroller's office concurred with 1 recommendation and partially concurred with the final 2 recommendations.
Well, do you think the final answer here is some kind of system of payments and accounting that are the same for each of the military services, maybe one that doesn't have to be singular for the entire department, but at least identical and copied from area to area across DOD? Would that get them closer to where they need to be?
That certainly is maybe an option, but that is probably going to be a longer-term solution. If you look at the DoD environment, they have over 2,000 separate systems spread across DoD. These are called feeder systems. So they have to be rationalized. They have to be understood what the business process is. These feeder systems eventually input the information or provide the information into the general ledger systems or ERPs, which ultimately produce the financial statements or the information which is used by decision makers to make financial decisions. So what you have said is an important point. However, when you look at the details within the Department of Defense, the sheer scale of it makes it difficult to come up with one solution which is going to fit all different enterprises. The first step is for them to really understand what the business processes are and to make sure whether they still make sense at this point in time, because some of these business processes or practices have developed over the past several decades and may not really be applicable or could be done much better if they understood, well, the ultimate goal is of that business process, it could go through some sort of a re-engineering process, and then you could develop a system to be able to support that business process.
Do these reports ever feel sort of like Groundhog Day to you?
Well, some of the information we contain in there that DoD has been on the high-risk list, GAO's high-risk list for the past 2 decades, yes, I mean, that is repetitive. However, it's worth repeating because these are important points, given that DoD has about 50% of the U.S. government's discretionary budget, and they also have reported over 70% of the federal government's fixed assets. So it is an important point. However, this report goes a step further, like our other reports do, is to provide more granular information, more actionable information to the military services and to DoD, how to track and monitor the corrective action. The reason this is important because absent an opinion, it's going to be very difficult for DoD management or for the other stakeholders, such as the DoDIG, the Government Accountability Office, or Congress, to be able to track how DoD is progressing towards their ultimate goal of getting an unqualified opinion on their financial management and address their financial management high-risk weaknesses. And we feel if they follow our recommendation, it's going to provide more interim information to be able to tell what the progress is absent an opinion.
Asif Khan is Director of Financial Management and Assurance Issues at the GAO. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you very much, Tom.
We'll have a link to all those recommendations and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. I'm Tom Temin.
You've been listening to Pentagon Solutions. Download this show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Pentagon Solutions.